Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we will focus in on the state of the U.S. economy, tying into the conversation I'll be having here with Andrew Dubinsky, senior U.S. economist from the UBS Chief Investment Office. His new piece, which comes out on a monthly basis, a U.S. Macro FAQs, the forecasts, 10 frequently asked questions as it relates to the U.S. economy. So, Andrew, thank you for dropping by Top of the Morning as always. Great to be back on the mic with you.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. I'm really glad I could be back.
So, Andrew, as mentioned, this is a monthly piece. You recently launched U.S. Macro FAQs to Forecasts, and within you, on a monthly basis, hit on 10 frequently asked questions as it relates to the U.S. economy. Now, unfortunately, we will not have time to cover all 10 today here on Top of the Morning. However, I do want to hit on a few topics that have been top of mind for our listeners, our clients, perhaps beginning with AI adoption and the impact AI is having or will have to the U.S. labor market. So from what you've been picking up on, Andrew, what would you say are the AI effects showing up in labor data? What have you been seeing?
Yeah, no, thank you. So this has definitely been a hot question and one that we address in, you know, in this monthly presentation and even written a longer note on it. And, you know, clients are hearing two extremes on AI. You know, on one hand, it's a, you know, it could be a really big boost to growth. But on the other hand, you know, it could be an issue that affects, you know, unemployment in the U.S. or globally. And so we took a closer look, and I think our conclusion today, for at least for 2026, is that we're expecting a really mostly a gradual change to the labor market. We can look at adoption across many industries, and we can see it's, you know, it's rising steadily, but with a, you know, wide range in different places. The places where you see the fastest adoption aren't, you know, shocking. You see it in high tech places, finance, but even when you look closely at the places where you've seen the fastest adoption, the overall effects are still pretty small. So just to put a number on it, we think, you know, overall, we think, you know, AI over the past year has probably lifted the unemployment rate by about a tenth or so. So, you know, modest uplift and, you know, contributes to some of the downside risk to the labor market, but not a huge, big contribution that I think matches the concerning headlines that you see. In the facts presentation, we have a couple charts zooming in on one of the most affected sectors, which is high-tech jobs. And there, if you like, we're talking about software publishers, computer system designers. And what you see is that sector is having some outright contraction, and it's lagging the private sector job growth by a couple percent. And so, you know, that is makes sense, like, given the adoption there to be pretty fast, and the productivity improvements in those places could be fast enough to cause some disruption to the labor market. That is, you might not need as many people to do a similar amount of work. But, you know, drawing from history, what you often will see is productivity booms, and we're not necessarily in a productivity boom yet, but we're in an environment where productivity is pretty strong, and you know, over 2% in recent years. And, you know, AI could help keep that going. Those tend to be pretty positive for the labor market over, we'll call it a business cycle, maybe not in the short run, with the idea that more GDP activity often generates more hiring because people are spending more, and you often will see some gains in some upstream sectors. And I think the best example to highlight, and we have a picture of this, is that if you look at the data center construction, which I would consider an upstream industry, from all the AI spending on CapEx, you're seeing a lot of hiring in those types of jobs. We're talking about electrical contractors and plumbers. And so in that sector, you're seeing fairly strong hiring, especially compared to the rest of construction. So you're looking at, you know, hiring that's a couple percent faster than, you know, other types of construction jobs. So when we look at this issue right now, we say, okay, it's certainly, you know, a factor to watch, but we would say AI labor disruption is not really a material driver of the, you know, the macro outlook for this year. And it's not enough of a headwind for growth or the labor market to trigger something like a Fed response. And that's our takeaway for now.
Very interesting and helpful clarity on a question that's been top of mind for many. Another question that's been top of mind has been the economic impacts of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which was signed into law about a year ago, summer of 2025. With that, Andrew, can you speak a bit to the status of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act tax cuts, and how might higher energy prices as a result of the ongoing geopolitical conflicts in the Middle East be offsetting any fiscal boost from those tax cuts?
Yeah, so that's something we've been closely watching. That is the effect of the one, how are the tax cuts coming in for individuals, and just what are the signs that could be helping spending. And I'll touch on energy in a second. So we can look at the tax season, which obviously we passed the April 15th deadline, but there's still some processing going on. And we can look at refunds and see they're up about 16% or so compared to last year. So that's roughly, we're tracking about $50 or $60 billion extra in refunds. And why is the refund season so large? Well, one, we did have some tax cuts, but there was a retroactive element to it, which is basically grouping 2 years of tax changes into one. So that's why the beginning of this year had quite a large expectation for extra disposable income for households as they filed. So we see the refunds are up a lot. And then another part, it's a little bit more of a mouthful, but it's familiar to many of us, is that non-withheld payments are also down quite a bit when you adjust for higher capital gains. So what are non-withheld payments? That's just when you owe money to the IRS. And you have to write a check. So that's something that's probably familiar to many people. When we look at that, they're down also quite a bit as well. So and so putting that together, we're talking about at least an extra $100 billion probably for this tax season. And then throughout the year, people are going to benefit from lower withholding. And so I would say overall the bill is tracking close to what the initial estimates were going to be for this year in terms of how households would get probably around another $160 billion of dollars in spending power. Now, the flip side to that is we've obviously had this energy shock, and gas prices are over $4 a gallon. And if gas prices stay at these levels, that results in roughly $130 billion hit to people's spending power. So they're just going to have to spend more on gas, just to buy the same amount of gas compared to last year. So you can see 130, that's pretty close to the 160 that we were talking about. And if gas prices went up, it could easily erode all the extra income from the tax cuts. So it looks like tax cuts definitely helped latter part of Q1, probably Q1 spending. We had 1.6% consumption growth for the overall for the quarter. Probably is going to be a tailwind at least for the beginning of the second quarter. But as we go, go deeper into the year, these oil headwinds are probably going to offset the tailwinds from fiscal stimulus, and it's going to be more of a wash. And so, obviously, we'll watch closely oil prices and to see how long we remain at these levels and whether they completely offset the tax cuts.
So we do have time for one more question, Andrew, and I do, of course, want to focus in on the Fed monetary policy as rates have been a point of interest for the markets. And it's interesting, I'm curious as to the signposts out there that might be influencing the Fed's decision-making when it comes to the course for monetary policy. What is the Fed watching for, and what would set up further rate cuts in your view?
Yeah, so our base case is that we're expecting two more cuts to return policy to a more neutral rate, starting later this year. But the higher oil prices and the supply chain disruptions from the Middle East conflict, here we're bringing up oil again, really add a lot of uncertainty to timing of when these cuts will resume. Now, based on Chair Powell's last press conference, I think we have at least a couple of conditions that'll carry over to incoming Fed chair, and that is we need to see slower core goods inflation, which is really just another way to say we need to see that the tariff inflation effects are really behind us, and they're adding possibly up to 1 point to core goods to overall core inflation, and we just need to see for sure that's a one-off effect. And we've seen 1 month of good data or better data, but they're really going to need to see at least three more months of improvements to know tariffs are really behind us. And the second thing they're going to need to see is that higher oil prices are behind us and that we have some clarity or improvement in these bottlenecks that are coming from the closure in the Strait of Hormuz. And then I think the last thing is we see some signs that, you know, either that the labor market softness is an ongoing issue, and that's combined with slower growth trends. You know, the Fed has a pretty optimistic growth view for 2026, about 0.4 above the consensus at 2.4%. And I think as the data comes in a bit softer than that, they're going to have to pull forward the timing of maybe when they thought about bringing rates back to neutral. If you're pretty optimistic on growth, you're probably not that concerned about the labor market. But as the growth data comes in a bit softer than that, the concerns about the labor market probably inch up again, and I think that's going to motivate that returning to a more neutral stance. And of course, we're going to watch closely what the incoming chair says and just how he might adjust those signposts in terms of what he's looking for, and whether maybe he can convince his colleagues that we should be considering to look at some other issues.
Well, Andrew, thank you as always for spending some time with our listeners, our clients here on Top of the Morning today, for providing them with a health check on the U.S. economy and hitting on some of these frequently asked questions as it relates to the health of the U.S. economy. Again, for you, our listeners, this is a monthly piece from Andrew Dubinsky, senior U.S. economist here at the UBS Chief Investment Office, U.S. Macro FAQs to Forecasts, 10 Frequently Asked Questions as it relates to the U.S. economy. So looking forward to having this ongoing conversation with Andrew here on Top of the Morning. Though, Andrew, great speaking with you as always. Thank you for dropping by today.
Oh, yeah, it's been my pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.